Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. And this is Bookworm. Today, I'm very pleased to have as my guest Ralph Sassone. He's the author of a new novel, a first novel called The Intimates, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Now, when I read the book, I said, this is not a first novel. It's too well-structured. It's too accomplished at the kinds of things that first novelists usually don't do well. So I thought we'd talk about this unusual thing and very difficult thing right now, the first novel. First of all, Ralph, you're published by the publisher that probably most writers want most, Farrar, Straus & Giroux. How did this all happen?
Well, I'm very proud to be associated with them, obviously. And how it happened was the way so much of my writing life has happened, which was circuitously. I had written something resembling the first section of the book, and it was given to a man, a literary agent, who read it, enjoyed it, encouraged me, and then I wrote the second section. He encouraged me more. I wrote the third section. He became my literary agent, but when the time came to send the book out to various publishers in hope that one of them would accept it, and he told me not only that he was sending it to that house, but to a particular editor at that house, I was very surprised.
Petrified, I would think.
I thought it was a moment of insanity on his part, because I associated this editor with, rightly, with you know, serious and revered literary figures, and at the risk of sounding too humble, I didn't think that my book could stand in that company. So it was when he decided that he wanted to take it and work with me, it was extraordinary, and it's continued to be an extraordinary experience for me, because he's somebody that I trust. I not only revere, but I trust implicitly.
This is Jonathan Galassi, the editor of this book, and he's the chief editor at Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And, you know, so when a writer knows that Jonathan is going to be reading the work, it must be a very nail-biting weekend that you spent.
It was, and there was an even bigger nail-biting weekend, which was that I got word from my agent fairly shortly after it was sent out that Jonathan Galassi was interested in the book, but that he wanted to meet with me to ask a few questions about it. And I guess, you know,
oh, but that's sheer terror.
Right. And it was I was notified of this on I think a Tuesday, and my agent said, and he'd like to meet you next Monday. And I said, these are going to be the six longest days of my life.
Did you go shopping?
I did not go shopping. I only half jokingly said to my agent, can't we just say that whatever he wants is fine? If he wants me to, you know, change the book in any way, transform it completely, it's fine with me, because I would so like to work with him and I so trust his judgment that I would really do anything. And in fact, I was so open to his suggestions that the first time we did meet that Monday, he asked me some really interesting questions about the book and made some suggestions. And I was so agreeable automatically that it's almost a comic story. He said, well, you know, Ralph, why don't you, because he's a very gentle man, he said, why don't you don't have to agree to everything right now. Why don't you go home and sleep on it for a few nights? It's like, no, really, really, I agree with everything automatically. And it's been as wonderful an experience working with him as one would fantasize.
Now tell me, what do you suppose it was that he liked? Because this is a devilishly hard time to get a book accepted, a first novel. Very hard.
It is. And I think, I've never asked him specifically what he liked about the book. I would like to think that he was attracted to the emotional intensity of the book. I would like to think that he was attracted to the fact that the book is about friendship and that there aren't very many adult literary novels about that, as I've said in other contexts, but I'm not sure about that.
Well, you know, I think he must have loved the fact that it's about people in that range, graduating high school to just after college, who are trying to find themselves in New York City.
Right.
I mean, it's a hot subject.
And it's a subject that those of us who live in New York City and have worked even tangentially in the arts can certainly relate to, because it's not an easy ride. And it's not an easy ride for the characters. And I think of Jonathan's intelligence is extremely subtle. And his editorial comments were extremely subtle. They were brilliant, but they were extremely subtle. And I'd like to think that he liked the subtlety of the book, too, because it's not a book that I don't think it's a book that provides easy answers. I think it's the kind of book where certain readers might be confused, because what it's putting forth is the fact that the two main characters are devoted to each other. And yet, as one of them says or observes about their relationship, he thinks, well, we're like each other's human diaries, but as with real diaries, certain things get withheld. Certain important things get withheld. Certain important pieces of information. And I think that that would be confusing to a lot of readers. They'd say, well, it's one way or the other.
One of the characters, whose name is Maze, sort of tells us what the book is about, but maybe four or five pages before its end, she says it's about friendship and having company while you're flailing.
Yes. And I thought that certainly I flailed for many, many years. Everyone I know who's in his or her 20s is flailing. I mean, there are these exceptional kids who are very directed. They're very practical. Those aren't my characters, and those aren't my friends for the most part. So certainly something that I related to, it's something most of my friends relate to. And yes, company and an intimate company is – and the different kinds of intimacy, of which I think friendship may be the most important in this book, at least.
I'm talking with Ralph Sasson. He's the author of The Intimates. It's a wonderful first novel about young people, one of whom may be about, by the book's end, to sit down to write her first novel.
Right.
I think so. It might be this novel.
Well, you know, it's interesting because she's not aware of the fact. She's encouraged here and there as a writer. But I really see Mays, particularly in the first section and the third section, as the observing consciousness, the person who's on the sidelines, watching, taking things in, trying to make sense of them, not making sense of them very often, just the way a writer does. There's a moment in the third section of the book, you may recall, where she and her best friend Robbie happen to be in the suburbs, and they're basically doing something a little creepy, which is that they've at nighttime, they have gone into the backyard of a nearby house. It happens to be a house that Robbie's mother is going to be possessing in the near future. She has bought it. She's moving down the street to a smaller house. And they observe the family that lives within. It's like a tableau for them. It's like a lighted tableau. The family is – it's dark. The house is lit up. They're watching the mother and father and their children. And at one point, there's a little girl that they're looking at. And there's this meditation on Maze's part that she imagines that this little girl who's out of the living room or whatever they are observing at that moment is actually up a flight of stairs watching her family, observing her family, and that this is what she does, that she has a diary and that there are waves of attention rolling from her toward her family. And that's really to say this is what Maze is and this is what Maze has been doing, a version of.
Not just a diary, but a pink plastic diary with hearts on it.
Right, exactly.
Even as a little girl, you have a hiding place, it seems to me.
Yes, yes.
And Maze always does. Now, I want to jump in here because Maze seems to come from Maisie, of what Maisie knew by Henry James.
You're so right.
Sense. Well, the reason why I guessed, and everyone has to applaud me when I say this back at home, you know, where you were listening, it said in the first sentence, whenever Maze snuck away to see Hal Jamesley, and I thought, Hal?
Right.
Henry Jamesley?
Right.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I know. Do you think that's too precious? It's like my little joke with myself. I didn't expect anyone to get it. You're the second person who's gotten it without my cueing them.
No, I started to realize because the thing about point of view, as much as this book is, this isn't a James book in that it's hard or Americans in Europe.
Right.
No, it's a James book in that it's careful in its presentation of point of view, mm-hmm. and that each character, in a certain sense, has a secret
mm-hmm.
woven into them that the book doesn't directly reveal, but is unavoidably known by the end of the book. Now, there's a very dear quality that I happen to know about this book. Tell us all, this is your first completed novel, but how long had you spent wanting to write and working on and abandoning novels?
It seems like forever now. I mean, I was encouraged as a writer from a very young man. I had wonderful teachers, most of whom wrote very different kind of work than I did and that I have. Let's just say I didn't write. But I would say that it took me many years.
What would you say, 15 years?
Yes. Yes, that's what I mean by many, unfortunately, to far more than I expected and far more, I think, than a number of people who knew me expected. It took many, many years for me to discover what kind of writer I am. What I knew better was what kind of writer I'm not than what kind of writer I am. I'm not a social novelist or a satirist, although I certainly envy people who have that ability. I'm not a philosophical novelist because I don't have any big ideas. I feel a sense of guilt about this that may or may not be rational. It's probably irrational. But my teachers were, for the most part, avant-garde writers. And I had nothing but admiration for them. I mean, and I admired their inventiveness, their boldness, their willingness to experiment with form and with the idea of what constituted a story. And I was highly suggestible when I was their student. I mean, I wanted to.
Oh, so did you fall under the sway of the experimental
writing? I did for a little while. Yeah, uh-huh. I did. Uh-huh. But it took me a long time to realize that that's not who I am as a writer. It was interesting because at one point I was working with one of them and
you're so discreet. John Hawkes?
I worked with John Hawkes, who I should say for the record, you know, saw both my more experimental efforts and my more conventional realist efforts and was equally encouraging to both. I worked with Walter Abish, who at that point had just written what's probably his best-known book, How German Is It? Or not just, but he had written it. That was his most recent book. And I remember, you know, I made an effort to emulate them because I so admired them. But I remember reading two books that I'm not saying that they turned me around then because it was many years until I actually wrote this book.
What were they?
Well, they were two books. One was Madame Bovary.
Uh-huh.
And the other was Richard Yates's Revolutionary Road.
Ah.
Which was such a revelation to me that I think that book is really a masterpiece.
Okay, let me clarify here. You know, the 60s, the late 60s, mid 60s even, the novel had turned around. After the kind of novel Henry James wrote, suddenly we were getting experimental mm-hmm. novels. These included things like Joseph Heller's Catch-22, but also John Barth, your teacher, John Hawkes, Walter Abish. And, you know, Walter Abish wrote a book called Alphabetical Africa, in the first, which the first chapter, every word begins with A, then the second A and B, etc. And so, and these novels had, in a sense, displaced most other novels. They were what were being reviewed on the front page of the New York Times. And so a young writer had every reason to think at that time, the old stuff, the close into the character stuff, like you're talking about, Madame Bovary, Revolutionary Road, would be vanished forever.
Or was hopelessly banal. And I don't believe that anymore, of course. I'm not sure I really even believed it back then. I will say that one thing, although my work is more conventional and realist than another person I worked with was Robert Coover, another person of that other ilk. I'd like to think that one of the things I got from all of them, though, was that although I'm not an avant-garde writer or an experimental writer or a postmodern writer with a capital P, that the impulse to try to make it new did stick with me, that you couldn't just write in a conventional form and write about familiar characters and just think that that was enough, that you had to do something else to redeem the familiarity of it, to make it a little fresher or more exotic. I'm not sure I've succeeded in doing that in this book, but that's certainly something I wanted to do.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Ralph Sassone, author, most recently. It's his first novel, The Intimates. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Ralph Sassone about The Intimates, a novel in which friendship is seen ultimately to be as important and as revealing as those relationships that become sexual. In fact, sex in this book is a kind of red herring, because the man is gay. The woman first loved him. It seems as if her first love, the older man, seems kind of gay too. And she may just like that. But now, years have passed. They met in high school. They went through college together. And they're still closer together than they are with any potential mate.
Any conventional mate. I did really want to, I mean, and I can't say that I set out to do this, but as the book evolved, I began to see that what I wanted to do was write about characters for whom friendship was as important a romance as more conventional romances, sexual relationships or legal marriages and or even, you know, dates with members of the opposite sex. I didn't see that many books that honored friendship in that way.
And you see, because at night they discuss their days with one another, and because each of them is a mystery to himself or herself. Maze is a maze.
Right.
And her friend Robbie, he spent years not speaking to his dad after he and his mom got divorced. And now all these years later, we're going to witness a very strange reconciliation in Italy. one in which he follows the wrong person around, believing that his father's wife is having an affair. He doesn't trust anyone but his friend, and neither does Maze. She's not a good truster herself. And so together, they get to explore the mystery of their ambivalence and their remoteness.
Yes, and they're very similar characters in a way. I mean, I think it's pretty natural that they would gravitate to each other and that they would not trust very many other people in their lives. They're both only children. They're both children of rather bad divorces. They're both people whose initial sexual forays have been, to say the least, dissatisfying.
And unexpected.
And unexpected. And they're both, you hit on it when you said that the characters are mysteries to themselves. They are. And I think that I think one of the things that Maze and Robbie are looking for in their friendship is somebody who will be a mirror and help them understand not just who the other is, but who they themselves are, which I do think we do go to friendship for. It's one of the ways that we help define ourselves.
Now, you're writing a first novel after years, and I want to tell listeners, this is why so many writers need the support of their families, their parents. It often takes years. Those people who do it too quickly are probably doing it wrong. It's just a fact. It takes a long time to know even what a novel is. So let's examine the point of creating a new novel. I notice that in this book, for instance, each of the characters, practically all of them, steals something.
Yes.
And this question of theft, particularly things that have to do with theft of identity or theft of intimacy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you know that as you started?
Well, what's interesting, that's very interesting, because I knew it by the time I finished the book, certainly. And you'll notice that the pattern of thefts is probably most obvious or most prominent in the third section of the book. Mm-hmm. And yet you're right that it has a lot to do with these – I mean, there are actually things that are stolen, objects that are stolen, among other things, in the third section of the book. But that's not the only kind of theft. And it's pleasing to me that you would connect that – to the questions of identity that loom large in the earlier sections of the book and throughout the book, because yes, people are to a certain extent stealing other people's identities as well, or at least borrowing them because they want to, partly because it's a mistake, but partly because they're longing to be someone else.
Yeah, they have experienced their own remoteness, their distance enough that they'd like to jump into someone else's shoes, someone
right.
who walks more firmly and more erectly.
A lot of Maze's fantasy life is centered around the idea of different Mazes, that there are these endless alternative Mazes that she might be. And it starts when she's applying to college and she sort of sees that she could actually present herself to each different college as a different kind of girl to suit the particular tastes of the college that she's applying to. She's basically not progressing as much as she might because she really can't decide which Maze she would like to be. She has all sorts of fantasy versions of herself. And it comes from a deep ambivalence that both of these characters share, as many of us are who long to be fully understood by another person, but are also terrified of that kind of intimacy.
Now tell me, you, Ralph Sasson, graduate from college longing to be a writer. You work as an editor at the Village Voice mm-hmm. Literary Supplement. Mm-hmm. You now teach creative writing at Vassar.
Right.
What does a person do between the time he graduates college saying, I'm a writer, for those terrible years until you actually are a writer and a first book gets published?
Right. Well, I not only did the kind of things that you would expect would-be writers to do, like teach writing or edit other people's writing, or I wrote a lot of reviews of other people's writing for various publications. But I also did work that was completely unrelated to writing, just really, frankly, for financial reasons. And that actually was a good thing because it widened my perspective a bit, and it took me out of the zone where I was just a would-be writer. And frankly, somebody who went around feeling a lot like he'd failed.
Well, a wonderful teacher once said to me that until you discover who you are, every young person is a rascal and an imposter. And it only depends on whether you feel comfortable being a rascal and an imposter.
I wasn't.
No,
that
most
was the
of
problem.
Us aren't.
That was the problem. I would have had a lot more fun if I'd been comfortable being a rascal and an imposter. But I think, you know, when you say an imposter, I think the ambivalence of the characters, the quest of these two main characters, Maze and Robbie, to use a trite phrase, discover themselves or discover something or try to discover enough about themselves so that they have some fix on who they are and what they think and what they feel. Well, that part of it, although it's not an autobiographical book, that's very autobiographical because I'm not going to say I was flailing, but I was certainly wondering.
And wondering.
And wondering, yes. And wondering. And feeling ambivalent.
Uh-huh.
Although I always knew that I loved writing. But I should correct that. I love the idea of writing. I don't think I really enjoyed writing until I wrote this book. Before then, I would write. I would write diligently. Sometimes I would write well. Sometimes not well. But it was not a pleasant process. What I enjoyed was having written. I didn't enjoy writing. And this was the first piece of writing I've ever done where I actually enjoyed the process.
I've been talking with Ralph Sassone, author most recently of The Intimates, published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from The Intimates at kcrw.com/bookworm. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. And we're just read this, I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.